Hello, my name is Susan Brucci, and I'm the president of Applied Survey Research, and we're a nonprofit, community-based organization and research firm that has been involved in over 30 years in helping bring better information from the community level with an eye towards moving from information to action, and especially targeting and working in partnerships with vulnerable populations. I believe that's why we were selected for this section. And I'd like to thank my fellow and co-leading presenters. And I'd also like to thank the Public Health, Education, and Health Promotion section and the caucuses that supported this work, especially focusing on socioeconomic status, health disparities, everything that we talk about. And I will be saying we because I represent a lot of partners here with you today, is geared towards reducing health disparities. I have no financial relationships to disclose. And we're going to think a little bit about how community assessment leads towards action, and especially focusing in on the northern Arizona area, focusing primarily on children and their families 0 to 5. We're going to pay special attention to tribal families. Anybody here from northern Arizona? Arizona. All right. Very good. Welcome. Thank you very much. Anybody here that specializes in 0 to 5 populations? Vulnerable populations. Okay, there we go. All right, thank you very much. So a little bit about the Coconino region, but first I want to give a little background about Applied Survey Research. We've been partnering in Arizona for many, many years, specifically focusing in on some of the rural areas. We did a community assessment with the Coconino County, which includes Flagstaff. And we did that several years ago, and then we were very excited to continue to partner in terms of working with children and youth assessments, driving down our data collection, particularly focusing on peer-led activities with a very rigorous approach. So what we are sharing is several years of purposely using information and driving it down to the folks that themselves that were telling their story. And also want to tell a little bit about the Coconino region. We are focusing on the regions that are defined in the First Things First group, which I'll tell you a little bit about, but it spans 3 counties, and it's very rural, it's remote. The population, again, looking in the Coconino region, is 125,000, approximately 10,500 children ages birth to 5 in 2010. The population of the children was about 30%, you know, 1/3 white, 1/3 American Indian, 1/3 Hispanic or Latino. Majority of the population, 5 and older, spoke only English at home, while the rest of the percentages spoke either Navajo or Hopi, and 8% spoke Spanish at home. 23% of families live with children ages 0 to 5 or single mother-headed. 18% of children birth through 5 are living in a household with a grandparent or as a householder. So basically, trying to set the stage is that it's a very rural and isolated area, and poverty has been a big issue and challenge. Enter First Things First, which was a voter pass proposition, which directed monies flowing from the purchase of tobacco to support all sorts of aspects of support for children 0 to 5 and their families. Patterned off of the First 5 effort in California, their goal is for all Arizona's children ready to succeed in school and life. So an infusion of resources, care, and commitment really focused on young families of young children. This is the Applied Survey Research Community Improvement Cycle. We've been using this cycle of turning data to action for many, many years. We've got a lot of interest in the concept of participation and thinking with the ends in mind, what does success look like for community members in terms of quality of life? How do we measure that? What's the right precision of data that we need? How do we make sure that the information is shared and distributed throughout community members, that it it's a bottom-up approach, that this information is empowering and is their data about their reality. How do we link that to community action? We use results-based accountability as a way to distinguish between community-level indicators and program evaluation. And how do we sustain progress when we can demonstrate that? We see this as a cycle, and we see that communities that do this type of secular process over and over again really have a different way of working together. We call that community transformation. We'll talk a little bit about that. I just returned from New Delhi, where I had the chance to talk about this cycle and how we are seeing self-led groups, when they have their information, if they participated in their information, really make a difference in terms of well-being. And not only that, it actually results in economic activity. When people feel better and they have the skills to achieve more economic activity, they get jobs and they contribute to their community. So that being said, most of what I'm going to talk about, that I will share some data from our partners, but we're really thinking about what precision of data do we need, and how do we receive information from some of these local and rural areas that don't traditionally have the data that they need at their fingertips. We've been working throughout the state of Arizona for several rounds of these needs and assets reports that are the basis of the planning for the First Things First initiative. And there's been a lot of difficulty in accessing data. Many times some of the information is not available because of tribal concerns about protection of the data and not being respectfully handled. In fact, they're in the Coconino region, the Havasupai tribe actually won and persevered in a legal action because of incorrect and inappropriate care and guardian of their data. So there's a lot of fear and really trepidation about participating in community level research, and I'd have to say that those fears have been well grounded. Some of the other fears are, how is the data going to be used? Is it going to be telling the story? And not only that, but the Coconino region includes the Hopi as a traditional partner, as well as the Havasupai and the Kaibab Paiute. Nevertheless, there's only the Hopi has been participants and willing to share their information. So that's the trust and the building of relationships and the seeing that the information is going to be held appropriately. So it's a long kind of a process to capture some of the information. And I think most of the thing that we saw is working with the Hopi, they were participants with us in terms of collecting in the information. We'll talk a little bit about peer-to-peer research. Some of the trust is really fantastic when you actually work with these small groups and the information can be shared in a way that they can see themselves in the information. And we've had very great success in working with tribal partners within the auspices of the talking circle, which is actually a sacred moment with appropriate care and concern and guidance from tribal leaders to help us have a conversation about what well-being looks like for our tribal partners. Our peer-to-peer approach is, what do you do when the data's not there, when it's old, when it doesn't really tell the story that people want to about the assets and the great things in their life? Well, we involve our partners to go out and collect that information, again, geared by the stories that people want to tell, and how the best way to reach out to traditionally undercounted and underrepresented populations. We've been doing this work with homeless individuals, agricultural workers, youth, seniors, and certainly with our low-income participants. We were able to collect about 1,100 surveys in this way, peer-to-peer. And I just want to let you know that we are strong proponents of incenting participation. We train and supervise our peer-to-peer interviewers, and we support them financially, as well as we make sure that we always give incentives to our respondents, because they're giving us their precious time. And I want to thank right now my research team, our peer interviewers, and all of the families who took their time to tell us their story. Here's what a different the hubs look like in terms of the Coconino region. One of the main things that the group wanted to do was to tell the story of place-based. So we developed hub-related stories for each one of our areas, looking at health, strong families, and school readiness. So we have not only a geographic look, but we also have those three looks. And I have examples of what some of these briefs look like. We think that dissemination and an easy way to understand some of the findings is very important. Starting to look a little bit about some of the data. Again, we believe in triangulation. When we do our community research, we think that we need to have secondary data, hence the importance of some of our administrative data. We also like to collect survey data using random digit dial if at all possible. We've been using cell phones, all sorts of creative ways. This face-to-face, we like to make comparisons to each other through time and through the state. Here's unemployment status. Thank you very much. 5 minutes. The Coconino region is 12.4%. We actually believe, and we've been hearing that those overall, the percentages are high and getting higher in certain ones of the hubs. You'll see the Hopi hub as reporting the most unemployment status. By the way, when we do these face-to-face peer-led surveys, we always get different and higher evidence of risk for families. Gone without basic needs such as childcare, food, or housing, the Coconino region, 27% as a whole. And again, what you'll see is the Hopi tribe coming in at about 23%, and our northern hub, which is the most rural and remote, 30%. Receiving medical care all of the time. We were really surprised to see that the Hopi hub reported 38%, where the Grand Canyon hub, which is close to where the Havasupai are, said 74% able to receive health care. Highest county in the state in terms of tooth decay. This was basically a high priority action that was taken by the collaboratives in each one of these areas, and progress is being made. But this is a way that it was interesting for the Coconino region folks to understand that they actually were really far different than the rest of the state of Arizona. We saw who had seen a dentist or dental hygienist for dental care in the last 12 months, adjusted for age. Here's one of our maps in terms of comparing the hub data to the distance that it takes to get to mental care, And what you'll see is the darkest colors represents the Grand Canyon hub. They have to travel quite a long way to get any type of dental care. The reason I'm focusing on dental care is that is the priority that came out of this from what the folks said themselves and participation with the data. We also asked a little bit about, well, what's it like for you when you really want to access services? Here's our families that said that they strongly agreed that it was easy to locate services. Again, 57% from the Grand Canyon hub having difficulties. Whether available services reflect cultural needs across the board, 73%, but varies greatly by hub. So the high rates of tooth decay among children, highest in the county in the state. That led the place, as I mentioned, for turning information into action, turning the curve. What will it take? Each one of these strategies were different at different hubs, but it was also able to connect with a statewide initiative led through the First Things First at the state level, which was very exciting. This is the result. Oral health education. These are some of the strategies. Dental examinations, screenings, fluoride varnishes, mobile dental unit, grants to train dental hygiene students to work in underserved communities, and that effort is still going on and really being quite successful. Here's an example, as I said, of what an issue brief looks like in healthcare. This concept of community transformation is really, really important for us, and we really believe that as folks that are really trying to make a difference in disparities, especially with vulnerable populations, that these are skills and infrastructures that exist and we really, really need to see more of. This purposeful working together and having the skills to take action. As a researcher, I feel we've got the information that we need. It may not be perfect. We're kind of doing our part and the 25% of what does it take to turn curves, and we just want our community members to have the support to be involved in thinking really appropriately about what does sustaining well-being look like, what are the skills in the self-led groups that we need to order in order to achieve this. And we have been really excited about really talking like this about from a recovery mode and from also a transformational mode. And I could go a long way about keeping to talk about that. What's next? Needs and assets will continue to take place every 2 years. The information will be continued to be guiding planning and prioritization. First things first is really focusing in on school readiness. And we're really excited because we're involved in a school readiness assessment, which will be one of the first ones that we know of in the state of Arizona, so that we can understand what the readiness level of children throughout all of those hubs are when they begin kindergarten. So, sorry for the whirlwind approach here. I want to thank the partners, especially Ellen, who was our contact in the Coconino region. And I also wanted to thank you very much for coming today.